and welcome to Jazz Vignettes from the Hall. I am Fawn Fritzen. In this special series, music enthusiast Steve Gedrose explores the world of jazz from its roots to the present day. He breaks the fascinating, ever-evolving genre of jazz into easily digestible themes, backed up, of course, with plenty of music examples. In each episode, Steve will introduce you to the musicians who were or are some of the key driving forces behind the evolution of jazz music. We recorded Steve's presentations live at the beautiful Old Fire Hall in downtown Whitehorse, Yukon. Annually, between October and April, Jazz Yukon presents the Jazz in the Hall series, 5 concerts featuring local jazz groups. Each event is opened with a presentation by Steve, where he provides some background about the live music performed that evening. Today we are sticking close to home with Canadian jazz legends as we introduce some of the most influential Canadian jazz musicians of the post-war era. Included in this episode is music from such important artists as Fraser McPherson, Tommy Banks, Mo Kaufman, Ed Bickert, and Rob McConnell. Hello, Steve Gedrose.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our last Jazz in the Hall for the season. I would like to give a little talk tonight about Canadian jazz legends. Forgive me if I haven't included your favorite people, but I had 5 to choose, so that's the challenge. Generally in Canada, the post-war period is when jazz really came alive. We have a lot of clubs springing up across the country. Particularly, I guess, Vancouver and Toronto would be hot spots, as they probably remain today. But the first fellow I'd like to talk about is a tenor sax player called Fraser McPherson. He was born in Winnipeg in 1928 and passed in 1993 in Vancouver. He started playing in the New Orleans tradition on clarinet, which led to swing and bebop alto sax. And finally, thank goodness for all of us, he settled on tenor sax, probably in the late 40s. In the late 50s, he traveled to New York to study flute, which he also added to his arsenal. So now he can pretty well cover all the reeds, but primarily made his career playing tenor sax. He had a long career playing in the studios and nightclubs of Vancouver. He had extended residencies at the Palomar and the Cave nightclubs. He served as the band leader in the Cave from 1964 to 1970. And if anybody's from Vancouver, the Cave was a really famous jazz spot. They would invite soloists from the States, often supply a local rhythm section, and certainly Fraser was there for lots of these gigs. In 1975, he formed his own swing trio with bassist Wyatt Ruther and guitarist Oliver Gannon. Oliver has been up here several times and remains a wonderful player. I think he's in his late 60s, early 70s these days and still playing great. Fraser and his groups played many Canadian jazz festivals, including those in Vancouver, Edmonton, and Montreal. He also taught briefly at Vancouver Community College. He taught jazz and commercial music. At this point, there were very few jazz programs, so that was probably a new thing for Vancouver and for the jazz community there. He plays in a light swinging style. I think he was initially influenced by Lester Young, who's kind of on the smoother, lighter side of the tenor players, as well as a great big band player, Zoot Sims. Fraser liked to call in tunes at kind of a medium swing tempo, but he could tear it up on an up-tempo piece. Grant Simpson played with him, and he told me that sometimes, as the joke, the band would just count the tune in really fast just to see what Fraser could do, because he'd never counted in like that. So I thought that was fun, and he could certainly cut it. Fraser toured the Soviet Union in 1978, 81, 84, and 86. His music was very well received there. He has such a warm human sound that he was invited back many times. He was very popular among the Soviet fans. The track that I'm going to play is from an album that consisted of a band called, the album was called Honey and Spice. Steve Wallace on bass, John Sumner on drums, and again, Oliver Gannon on guitar. This is the band that accompanied him on his last trip to the Soviet Union. These were really influential to spread the gospel of jazz throughout the world. These tours were unprecedented for Canadian jazz musicians, and it led to Fraser being the second jazz player after Oscar Peterson to be named to the Order of Canada, which happened in 1987. So this first track, Rolly, is track number one. It's called You Took Advantage of Me by Fraser McPherson. That's Fraser McPherson. Don't you think he has just a wonderful sound? It's so swinging. I just love the guy. Second on the list is Tommy Banks. He's a pianist, arranger, and conductor from... He was born in Calgary, but spent a lot of his time in Edmonton, continues to spend his time in Edmonton. He's had a long and varied career in music. He has played with piano with artists from all kinds of genres, including great jazz vocalists like Anita O'Day, Rosemary Clooney, and pop stylist Katie Lang. He's also played with Tom Waits, Gordon McRae, and Joe Williams. So he's covered a lot of styles. He's also conducted classical concerts with symphony orchestras from Toronto and Vancouver to Austin, Texas. He was the musical director for such high-profile events as the Expo 86 in Vancouver and 1988, Winter Games in Calgary. Tommy has won a Juno as well as a Gemini Award for his work both in music recordings and TV. Actually, for a while, he had his own TV show on CBC that ran from... The Tommy Banks Show ran from 1968 to 83, which was kind of a variety show with a lot of music in. He has a discography of over 28 recordings, including recordings from that CBC TV show. In 97, he released some of his CBC broadcast transcriptions with a quartet and a big band featuring the vocalist Big Miller. I don't know if anybody's ever heard that. They used to play this on CBC occasionally, and just a big, rich, beautiful voice, Big Miller. He was from the States, but worked for many years with Tommy in Edmonton. They recorded in the late 70s, and I found this interesting that Tommy Banks also wrote the music for many TV shows, including Pierre Burton's show about the Klondike. So I guess we have a kind of a tenuous Yukon connection. He was renowned for both his skill and speed as an arranger, which is a good thing when you want to hire somebody that they're going to do it well and on time. So he was always first of the list for those kind of gigs. His quintet was the first Western jazz ensemble to play in the People's Republic of China during a tour he made of the Far East in 1983. So at this point, things were just opening up in China. I'm sure it was a different world than we would experience if we visited today. But there was Tommy playing jazz for all the good folks in China, and apparently it was a very successful tour. He's been a regular at the Edmonton Jazz Club Yardbird Suite, has worked with various groups, and has been featured at the Jazz City International Jazz Festival, which is also in Edmonton. He is also, as I've mentioned before, he's an officer of the Order of Canada. He received that honor in 1991. He received Alberta's Order of Excellence in 1993. And in 2000, he was appointed to the Senate. So I guess it's true that if you learn how to play well, good things will come because he still remains in the Senate. In 2010, he was the recipient of SOCAN Special Achievement Award for his contributions to the Canadian music industry and musical heritage of our country. And you know you've really got it dialed when Edmonton names a street Tommy Banks Way. So that's what we got for Tommy. I've sampled a piece for tonight from his solo album. It's called Yes Indeed. Track two, Rolly, this is called Imagination by Jimmy Van Heusen, played by Tommy Banks. Thank you. There you get a taste of his style. I think Errol Garner, a famous jazz pianist, is certainly an influence on Tommy Banks. The next guy up is a flute, clarinet, alto, soprano, sax player called Mo Kaufman. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with Mo Kaufman. He is a bebopper at heart. He moved from Toronto to New York in 1950 to study with the bebop guys. That was the center of the universe for that style of music after the war. He studied clarinet and flute with local classical musicians and then ended up in a few big bands. He toured with Jimmy Dorsey and Tex Beneke, among others, returning back to Canada in 1955, at which point he launched a studio career. Because he had excellent sight-reading ability and he had a classical tone on flute, which is not always the case with jazz players, he got a lot of work doing commercials, background music, work for film and TV soundtracks. He also formed a quartet and later a quintet, which gigged around Toronto and surrounding area. His groups would include such amazing Canadian artists as Ed Bickert on guitar and Bernie Senensky on piano. I thought it was interesting to note that Ed played with Mo for 35 years and Bernie played with him for 20 years. So you can tell they were pretty tight. Mo had a great thing going. He had a lot of gigs and was able to keep that band together for many, many years. I don't know if people are familiar with the technique called circular breathing, but it allows a wind or brass player to take in air through their nose, kind of hold it in their cheeks, so they have a steady stream of air coming out of the instrument. It just allows you to play tones virtually as long as you want to, and this really helped to produce a big sound on the flute that Mo was famous for. So he mastered these techniques, which are used by many players today, and it really adds to the texture and the variety of sounds that you can bring to the table. In 1956, Mo became the booking agent for a famous club in Toronto called George's Spaghetti House. This club closed in 1994, having been the longest-lived jazz venue in the entire country. So he booked a lot of acts into there. In the late 80s, he began booking classical musicians for Garth Drabinsky's Live Entertainment Corporation, which was doing big shows like Phantom of the Opera, Showboat, and Ragtime. So he supplemented his playing and his recording and his studio work with being a booking agent, which was pretty novel at the time. I don't think there were a lot of players that had the wherewithal to do that, frankly. But he was an organized guy and was able to make it all work. During the 70s, actually, I should mention his big hit was recorded in 1958. That's the Swingin' Shepherd Blues. I know we certainly played that in our school band in high school, and it remains a really great tune. He's certainly known best for that tune, I would say. Many jazz groups through the years have recorded Swingin' Shepherd Blues, including Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald did a vocal version, and Herbie Mann, another great jazz flute player, recorded it also. His success allowed him to continue both with his pop and jazz work for the remainder of his career. That just kind of made his name, I guess is what I'm saying. He recorded also several albums that kind of worked in classical music. He had kind of pop arrangements by Bach, Mozart, and Vivaldi. He was also a guest performer with a number of symphony orchestras across the country. So jazz wasn't his only thing, partly because of the instrument he played, but also his technique allowed him to enter into these other worlds. In 1972, Mo joined Canadian big band, the essential Canadian big band, I should say, called the Boss Brass. He was with them for 30-some years, 28 years, I think, until 2000. He was a featured soloist on the bebop material and recorded and played many concerts with the Boss Brass. In 82, he hooked up with bebop pioneer Dizzy Gillespie, and his quintet played many international dates with Dizzy. So this is as good as it can get in jazz, pretty much. Dizzy is considered one of the greatest innovators in our music, probably forever. So Mo was right in there. He was also named an officer to the Order of Canada in 1993. And inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame in 1997. So you can just see that these guys were making a contribution much beyond music. This was really, they were considered national treasures and continue to be so. So I'd like to play this next track. This is number 3, Rolly. This is called The Mover from the Mo Kaufman Project. It was the last recording from 2000. We'll be right back. Does move too. You can hear some of his incredible technique there. The next person I'd like to talk about is a particular favorite of mine. I guess they all are, but this guy really is. It's a guitar player called Ed Bickert. He grew up in Vernon, BC, and in a musical family. His mother was a pianist and his father was a fiddler. So Ed was taught a few chords by his older brother and began to play with his folks at country dances and things. And that's kind of how he got his start on stage. Eventually decided that that wasn't enough for him and moved to Toronto in 1952. Pretty soon was hooked up with a lot of great players in Toronto, and in 56, doing a lot of studio work with players such as Mo Kaufman, as I just mentioned, and Rob McConnell, who is the former of the Boss Brass. Ed formed his own trio around 1974 with a multi-instrumentalist and our good friend, who's been up here a few times, Don Thompson, was on bass on that project, and Terry Clark on drums. And they recorded a bunch of different stuff. The album I'm going to play in a minute here, or the track from the album, was recorded in 1975 and released in 76 with these with Don Thompson and Terry Clark. It was in about 1974 that I'm pretty sure guitarist Jim Hall introduced Ed Bickert to the great alto sax player Paul Desmond. He's the guy who wrote with Dave Brubeck Take Five, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. Wonderful alto player from the States. And this really spread Ed's name and reputation around the U.S. because he recorded a great couple of albums with Paul Desmond. They played in Toronto, but they also played on stateside as well. He's influenced by such jazz guitar legends as Charlie Christian, who was one of the first jazz players to play with an amplified guitar in the Benny Goodman Band. Also Jim Hall, as I mentioned, who's kind of the dean of a lot of modern jazz guitarists. And Kenny Burrell is another wonderful bluesy kind of electric jazz guitarist. I should mention that Ed Bickert was always known for playing a solid body Telecaster, not unlike what this bass looks like. Most jazz guitar players play a big hollow body guitar. It's called an arch top because the top is curved kind of like a violin, so it has an arch to it, which is a kind of a real warm sound and preferred by jazz players. But Ed Bickert was able to get a warm sound from this, from his Tele, and I think he always stuck with that same guitar. I was really surprised after hearing him to see that that was the very instrument he played, because I guess Teles are, they're kind of a workhorse. They could produce a lot of different sounds, but they're really well known in country music, not so much in jazz. He was able to get some, like I said, a warm, full tone, which really enriched the chords. I think the thing about Ed is that he has just had a really great command of harmony. He was able to play harmony on the guitar that was mostly considered impossible. It was mostly the domain of pianists when they have all kinds of more notes to choose. In his soul style, he does play some single note lines, but he uses a lot of chords to keep the melody going and to comp behind the different soloists. You'll hear in a minute how wonderful he can be. Throughout his entire career, he's considered one of the most influential players in the Canadian scene. He was also closely associated with Rob McConnell's Boss Brass. He appeared on most of their recordings. And in 83, Ed followed fellow Canadian Fraser McPherson to the Concord record label in California, where he recorded four very well-received albums. His profile was somewhat restricted by his reluctance to travel, so he mostly worked around the Toronto area. But he did a couple tours of Europe, but mostly spent most of his time, like I say, in Canada. He didn't like to fly, and he was a member of the Toronto club and studio scene for many, many years. In 1996, he was made a member of the Order of Canada. We start to see a pattern developing here that all these folks are recognized for the work they've done in the country. Ed continued to play and tour until his retirement in the early part of this century after the death of his wife, Madeline. So that kind of made him just want to stay at home and live a quiet life. So I'd just like to get Rolly to play. This is track number 4. It Might As Well Be Spring, a great Rodgers and Hammerstein tune played by Ed Bickert, Don Thompson, and Terry Clark. So you get a taste of that warm, beautiful sound that Ed Bickert made. This last person I'd like to talk about is a valve trombone player. He was born in London, Ontario in 1935 and passed on May 1st, 2010. His name is Rob McConnell. I mentioned him before. He was the originator of the Boss Brass. He formed that in 1968 and had many of these other people I've mentioned tonight playing with him. The band started as a 16-piece and evolved with time to 22 pieces, which is a powerful band, that's for darn sure. Mostly big bands come in around 15, 16 pieces, so he had a bunch of other pieces to get up to 22, and it was a really well-respected band. He had virtually every well-known player in Canada play in the band at some time or other. As I mentioned before, Mo Kaufman was there, certainly Ed Bickert. The aforementioned Don Thompson and Terry Clark were also involved. Also, Guido Basso, an amazing trumpet player and flugelhorn player from Toronto, was a big part of that band as well. They did a lot of pop music when they first started, but evolved to record jazz by about 1976. So this is 7 or 8 years into the life of the band. Rob was the main arranger and composer for the band, using famous composer arrangers like Gil Evans and Bob Brookmeyer as inspirations. Gil Evans is best known for his work with Miles Davis. Miles recorded Gil's Sketches of Spain, Porgy and Bess, and trying to think of several others. Miles Ahead was another one that Gil was involved in. Just really unusual arrangements. He would use instruments in peculiar ways, use a baritone for a high part and use a trumpet for a low part or things like that. He was always shaking it up. Certainly Rob followed in those footsteps to make some really interesting arrangements. One quote I read was by jazz singer Mel Torme that said, "Making this record was one of the two or three greatest musical experiences in my long and checkered career." So he appreciated the talent in the band and the great arrangements that Rob McConnell was coming up with. He started off as a slide trombone player and switched to valve, which gives you a different kind of articulation. There's a lot of different theories about which one's the best, but he preferred the valve trombone. So that's what he made his mark with. He also was inducted into, Rob McConnell, that is, was inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame, and in 1988 was made an officer of the Order of Canada. So I think that's a clean sweep. All these guys were inducted into the Order of Canada. This track is number 5, and it's called Winter in Winnipeg. Thank you. sounds pretty cheery for winter in Winnipeg, but there we have it. Thanks. That's just a brief overview of some of our Canadian jazz legends. Thanks very much.
You have been listening to the fourth installment of Jazz Vignettes from the Hall, titled Canadian Jazz Legends. We recorded this episode in April of 2011. This program was made possible by Jazz Yukon. Jazz Yukon is a volunteer organization that promotes and presents jazz in the Yukon through an annual integrated program of live jazz presentations and jazz education outreach. This episode was researched, written, and presented live by Steve Gedrose. Live recording by Jim Holland. Dieter Gade is our producer, and I am Fawn Fritzen. Thank you for joining us.